through the Bible. And we're in about Genesis 22? 20, yeah, we're going to pick up here in 22. Tonight we're going to do a little bit of backtrack, and then we're going to move pretty far forward, and then next week we're going to backtrack a little bit again and finish out the book of Genesis in probably two more weeks. Just so you know where that's going. And the reason that we're doing that is because there were three stories or three accounts here that I thought were pretty important, but they don't, you know, they don't just lay out neatly like we probably are used to reading them. And, you know, I've called them three great Genesis love stories. Tonight we're going to go into the brotherly love story of Genesis. And one reason why Esau and Jacob's relationship is so important is because it tells us a lot about Israel in general. And we'll get there when we get there in just a minute. But I'd like to invite you to go ahead and open your Bibles to Genesis 25. Now, I wrote something wrong in my notes. Did we finish answering the questions on the Genesis 25 to 34 worksheet? Okay. Did we get about to question 9? Okay. All right, let's really quickly, before we jump into the text, just knock these questions out. Now, again, these aren't written so that you have the exact correct answer. So if your answer is a little bit different, as long as it says the same thing, we're all right. So question 9 was describe...
We did question 8,
did we? Did we do question 8?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I've got that marked.
Okay. Question 8. Describe how... describe Jacob's dream in Genesis 28:10 through 22.
There was a ladder that he saw that had angels ascending and descending, and then he was given a message by God that he was going to basically be getting the blessings that had been promised to Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's about it. And we're actually going to cover that in more detail next week. Question 9 was describe how, this one we're also going to hit in more detail next week, but describe how Jacob became married to Leah and Rachel. This is Genesis 29. He worked for her. He did, and boy, I'm glad that's not our custom today. Yeah, he worked 7 years under the impression that he was going to get to marry Rachel. At the last minute, Laban did a bride swap on him, and he wound up marrying Leah, so he agreed to work another 7 years if he could marry Rachel as well, and wound up married to two sisters, which was dramatic, as we'll find out. In Genesis 29, 31 through 30, 23, list Jacob's children and which wife or concubine bore them.
Leah had Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel had Joseph and Benjamin, Bilhah, who was Rachel's handmaiden, and his concubine had Dan and Naphtali, and Zilpah, who was Leah's handmaiden, had Gad and Asher.
Correct.
And Leah had Dan.
True.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right. Yep, but I wrote children. I was thinking sons when I wrote the question, but good catch, Clark. I wrote children. Yeah. chapter 30, 25 through 43. How did Jacob become so prosperous?
The Lord blessed him.
Essentially that. Yeah, the Lord blessed him. And there was, I put a question mark next to this in my answer, some trickery, because, yeah, I'm not really sure if making spotted sticks in front of animals when they eat will actually do anything, but it was his intent at least.
One thing I get out of this, so Jacob.
I don't know.
The Bible says he does, so it does.
I guess.
tries to do this on his own. Mm-hmm. Jacob is trying to go back to deception again.
Yeah.
And not give God any credit.
No, Jacob worked hard.
He worked hard. Yeah, he worked very hard. 14 years for two women. Yeah.
Yep. And Laban was tricking him too. It was a mess. We'll get more into this next week, though.
Aside from his hard work, he tried to do it on his own, though, and leave the Lord out of it.
We'll come back to this more next week. Okay. Yeah, good. Save that comment, Jack. Don't forget that comment.
I'll forget it, buddy.
Question 13. Describe how Jacob prepared to meet Esau. You know, some think it was a dream, and some think it was pretty literal. I always kind of figured it was literal, but...
Well, I didn't, you know, when I read that, I said, I go home, but, you know, it's there.
Yep.
And he sent animals in groups to meet his brother, for his brother to see. You know, those were gifts for his brother. And he was uncertain how his brother would... But his brother, when he came to him, he threw his arms around him. And he told him, he said, he had prospered, he didn't need it. But Jacob insisted that he keep the animals and gifts.
Yes, sir. Yeah, he sent his gifts. Go ahead.
He was smart.
He was.
He was very wise to do that. Now, we're back to question 12, I think.
Did I skip another? I apologize. Oh, yeah, question 12. I did skip it. Why did Jacob flee from Laban, and did Jacob take anything that Laban owned? Or I should rephrase, did Jacob's household, anyone in his family, take anything that Laban owned?
Took Laban's idols.
Took his idols.
She hid him in his saddle when Laban was looking for him and told him that she couldn't. Moved because she was on her period and she was, and he did request that she move and he didn't look for her.
Yep.
Had his
idols. Yep. They did. They took his idols. Why did they wind up fleeing the way or leaving the way that they left?
Laban was angry.
Yeah, Jacob saw he no longer found favor in his sight. Yeah, they were a pair.
Backfired on him, and Jacob became prosperous.
Yep.
Well, Laban had a dream also, and the Lord told him
don't fight him over it. Let him go.
Don't fight over his stuff. Don't say anything. And Laban done a pretty good job of,
Yep. I mean, kept his cool.
He kept it low. He kept it at a low tone.
And God did also tell Jacob to leave. God told Jacob to leave, told Laban to let him go, and Jacob saw that he no longer found favor in Laban's sight.
He didn't need to be among the Gentiles. He needed to go back to where God promised
him. Yep. Had to get back there somehow. Question 14, how did Esau react when he met Jacob?
About the same way Jacob did.
Yep.
Glad to see each other.
Yep. He hugged him, kissed him, and wept. Describe Jacob's wrestling match, which we already kind of did, and we're going to go more into detail on that. But chapter 32, verse 24, says a man wrestled with him, and Jacob, the man was going to leave. We'll look more at this in detail, and Jacob said, "You can't leave till you bless me." And he dislocated or injured Jacob's hip or thigh, and then gave Jacob a blessing. Question 16. Which this was another one we're going to hit in more detail next week. How did Jacob come to be a master or overtake Shechem?
Is that when they defiled Dinah? They had the men of the city circumcised, and while they were healing, the brothers came in, two of them, and killed all the men.
Yep, that's exactly it.
Wild tale.
Yeah, that is a wild tale, that's right. Question 17 was, what did Jacob do in chapter 35 and verse 4 before going up to God? That's, yes, sir. He buried, essentially got rid of all the idols. Where do those idols come from? Question 18. Yep. Seems like they came from Laban's house.
Could they have also come from the Shechem? Because they took all of their possessions.
I thought that too, yeah. Could have come from... we know some idols were taken from Laban's house, and then as well as others around them. What did God rename Jacob?
Israel.
And then the last question, how did Rachel die?
In childbirth.
Giving birth to Benjamin. Yep, that's right. All right, so we're going to go back and we're going to dive into in a little bit more detail, but at least now everybody has an idea of what the answers to the questions are. But we're going to go back and we'll look at Jacob and Esau because, like I mentioned earlier, their brotherly hatred and their brotherly love teach us a bigger lesson about God's relationship with Israel. And when we finish Genesis, we pretty well immediately dive into God's relationship with Israel. So this is a good way to get ready for it. Look at Genesis chapter 25. And I'm going to pick up, I'm going to read briefly in verse 21. So this is Genesis 25, 21. Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it is thus, why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, the older shall serve the younger." When her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak, so they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So going into this, the root of this problem, I guess, is right here in this story of their birth. Before, because you know, a lot of times we jump right to the parents, but before the parents even had a chance to parent here, what were these two children doing? They were fighting. Yeah, they were fighting. I mean, to the point where when they were born, Esau came out first, and Jacob was hanging on to his heel. You know, just clinging to his heel. And I didn't really know this about babies, but babies don't really develop that the reflex to be able to like cling to something for a long time after they're born. I mean, Chloe's 7 months old, and she's still kind of figuring out. She can grab onto it is a different story. You know. So this is more than just an odd birth. This is God using birth to do something. Now, God specifically said what he was showing them here. What did he say about this conflict of these two children?
Two nations.
They're going to be two nations.
And the younger will be the strongest.
The younger will be the strongest. Yes, sir. The older will serve the younger. So we have... I mean, God has specifically prophesied there's going to be conflict. Now, they were named Jacob and Esau meant hairy. Sounded a lot like the word for red, and meant hairy, which fits because he was red and hairy. Jacob, there's a couple different definitions. They're all pretty much the same. Anybody know what those meant? Jacob?
Was your text by the heel?
Yep. It was also sounded like the word used for struggler or usurper and deceiver. Now, we went through the questions. We know that's a fitting name. Yeah, exactly. He fits that name. So all of this leads into... Oh, there's one other thing. How did the two parents feel about these two children?
They were separate. One loved one, the other loved the other.
Yes, sir. Yeah, they had favorites. You know, had favorites. One thing I love about this account is that it just shows that there's no such thing as a perfect family, but families can still please God. Even in a family with this much drama, you know, God's promises came true through Isaac and Jacob. So all of this leads into the next few verses. Let me get a volunteer to read verses 29 through the end of the chapter.
Esau came in from the open country famished. He said to Jacob,
quick, let me have some of that rib stew. I'm famished. That is why he is was also called Edom. Jacob replied, first sell me your birthright. Look, I am about to die, Esau said. What good is a birthright to me? But Jacob said, swear me first. So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank, and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright.
Now there's a lot here that I want to point out before we go on into this. The question I'm eventually going to ask, and this is just kind of a fun question to talk about, is who really did the wrong thing here? But let's start from the beginning. So Esau came in from the field and was hungry, and what did he do? Give me some of that stew. Now Jacob told him, swear to me now, what? Yep, give me your birthright. And I'm going to switch microphones. I'm sorry about that. In great need. You know, I mean, Well, let's look at that next before I make that point. What did Esau say when Jacob asked for his birthright? Yeah. What good is a birthright to me if I'm about to die? Now, here's a fun question. Do you guys believe Esau was actually about to die? I mean, he thought he was. Right. Yeah. I would say that's a safe assumption. We know, for example, in a minute that Rebecca had, I would say, a manipulative influence in her family. But at any rate, I don't think that he was about, for two main reasons. One, he was a hunter. He was good in the field. And also, you could literally eat plants. Like, sure, there were tons of plants he could just pick up and eat. And then on top of that, the last verse there in the chapter says, thus Esau despised his birthright. Now, the word there that's used for despising a birthright is the same one that's used in the Proverbs for someone. I don't remember which proverb, but you know, it's foolish essentially to despise the sayings of your mother, is the proverb. And you know, the point is, don't push away, don't disrespect, don't undervalue the things your parents instruct. So, what? No matter how hungry Esau was, he was misvaluing. He was valuing poorly. I think I just made up a word. But he wasn't valuing his birthright correctly. You know, he was putting the value of his hunger over his birthright. So it seems like he's a little dramatic.
Maybe differently, but Jacob would.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, there would be some kind of blessing for both. But Jacob, you know, he requested that birthright, which we went over last week. That birthright probably involved two things: the majority of the patriarch's possessions and property, as well as becoming the new patriarch, you know, the responsibilities of seeing over the family. And Esau freely gave that up. So Jacob worked some, I don't know if you could really call it deceit because he was straightforward, but he was requesting an unfair trade, you'd say that, I guess. And Esau did not value his birthright with the value to which it was to be valued. And really, this is where they're, at least scripturally, from what we know in Scripture, this is where their conflict begins. I mean, at birth and to their raising, all of the elements are there, but this is where that conflict really seems to begin. If we skip ahead a little bit to chapter 27, Isaac said to Esau in verse 4, "Go, you know, I'm about to die. Go and prepare delicious food such as I love and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul will bless you, may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah, in verse 5, was listening. When Isaac spoke to his son Esau, and Esau went to the field to hunt game and bring it, verse 6, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau, bring me game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me two good young goats so that I may prepare them delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father and eat so that he may bless you before he dies." But Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man and I am a smooth man." Now, essentially, Rebekah and Jacob conspire. They put on some fur on Jacob because apparently Esau was actually that hairy. They put on some of Esau's clothes. Rebekah prepared food like Esau would have prepared it. In verse 19, Jacob went before his father Isaac, and Isaac said, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm your son Esau." And Isaac, even hearing his voice, you know, he's blind, but hearing his voice, "This doesn't sound like Esau." So he said, "Come near so that I can smell you." He smelled him, he touched him, he smelled the clothing that smelled like Esau. He touched the fur that felt like Esau's hairiness. And then he said, and he ate the food and said, "If it tastes like an Esau, feels like an Esau, and smells like an Esau, it must be an Esau." So he gave Jacob Esau's blessing. In verse 34, Isaac broke the news to Esau that he had been deceived, and Esau asked for some kind of blessing, and Jacob gave him some kind of blessing. You know, in verse 39, "Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck." So all in all, that's not a great blessing. You know, you're not going to be prosperous, and you're going to live at war. But then there was that little bookend, you know, when it gets real bad, you're going to break the yoke from your neck and be free. The verse 41, how did Esau feel about everything that had happened?
And he said, "The day is morning, my father's approaching, then I will kill my brother."
And I'll kill him. He hated him to the point of a murderous heart. Which, let's look back at what happened here a little bit. So, if you were to look at this and say whose fault was all this? Let's start with just point one. Did Jacob have some kind of right to this blessing? There was that prophecy. Was there anything else that would give him some kind of right to this blessing?
At this point, he had the birthright.
Yeah, there's that unfair trade, and there's a little bit of debate about whether or not it would have gone with it. For the purpose of this class, I'll just say yes. It seems like this promise was a part of that. So there was that unfair trade, which when I was a kid, my parents, of course we had six kids, but my parents had to just outlaw trading because we made unfair trades. And, you know, they would make us stick by him. I don't know if all parents do that, but they'd make us stick by him. What else? Was there any other, did he have any other right really to that? Let me put it this way. Who did Isaac intend it for? Yeah, I mean, he specifically said it was for Esau. And generally, do you have to take the things you have a right to by trickery? I mean, if you're tricking somebody, why are you tricking somebody?
You shouldn't have to.
Mm-hmm, you shouldn't have to.
It should come
to you straightforward. Yep. Yep. What was another element in this deception? We kind of mentioned it. Where else did influence for this deception come from? Rebecca. I mean, Rebecca literally said, I've heard your father. I mean, did she have any, do you think she had any question about who Isaac wanted to bless? No, probably not. I mean, she literally said, I've heard your father. Let's go trick him. At the same token, though, Jacob could have always said no. He could have said, that's not right, Mom. It's probably not a good thing to do. Maybe you should go talk to Dad about the division of our birthright. Maybe you guys should get on the same page. But instead, Jacob jumps right in, verse 11. It seems like it. It seems like there's just so much going on here that is just out of line with a family, you know, a healthy family. Yep. And I do try to keep in mind when I read this that this is like a snapshot of a moment in their family history. I mean, we don't know what else was all going on, but yeah, that's true. This is the part that's relevant to our spiritual lives.
And all that time, of course, Esau is sitting, all them dads gone. And he softens. Obviously, Esau softens over a period of time to the point, like we talked about, when they met and embraced. And I don't know if it says they actually forgave, or he forgave his brother, but yet they were able to have some type of reconciliation. And God's will was, you know, carried out in a maybe a way that would never have thought about otherwise, but it would get carried out.
Yes, sir.
And they buried their father together, so they worked it out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which, again, I think it's evidence that even though families aren't perfect, you know, they can still glorify God. I'm going to move on a little bit here because I'm rapidly approaching my time limit. But up on this slide, essentially this slide kind of just summarizes what we've looked at and adds a little bit of information. Now, we're going to go back and we're going to look at Laban and Leah and Rachel next week. But for now, Esau and Jacob, like we mentioned, Esau was to the point of murder. Rebecca, in order to save Jacob's life, went to Isaac and said, hey, you know, let's not let him marry one of these women. In fact, what she said to Jacob was, these local women are driving me crazy. Esau married local women, and they caused Isaac and Rebecca great strife. So she says, let's send him back to the land of your fathers, which would have been up north in Ur. So Jacob went north toward Ur, which of course is not on this map. Now, it's one of those things, a lot of people are debate where Padan Aram, which is where Laban was, and Jacob wound up, and up north somewhere, I guess, would be the best answer. There's a couple different locations. Esau went south to Edom, and so Jacob and Esau were separated pretty well, right? And like just mentioned, there was several years, while what we talk about next week took place, essentially, Jacob went and worked for 14 years and got married to two women and then stayed with Laban for some period of time, you know, working his farm for him, essentially, while gathering up great wealth before he came back, which the return was as dramatic as the departure. Turn to chapter 32. in chapter 32. Now, at this point, like we mentioned in our questions, God has told Jacob to go home. God has told Laban not to give him any trouble. And on top of that, Laban has stopped favoring Jacob. So Jacob has returned home. And if you're looking up here at this map, I put some locations up here on the map that are relevant to this story. So Jacob would have come from the north to the Jabbok River, which was a little like branch of the Jordan River, where he would have been at Mahanaim, or I don't know how to pronounce it exactly, but that's about where he would have been for this event. So Jacob sent some servants to Esau with these gifts that we mentioned, which, by the way, an enormous number of gifts. Chapter 32 and verse 14 says 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their calves, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. Essentially, he's really making Esau pretty rich. So he sent these servants over to greet Esau and say, you know, you're my master and don't kill me. So he sent them over there. In verse 11, he directly says that he was afraid. And in verse 6, the servants report that Esau was coming to meet him with 400 men. Now, there's been a great amount of questioning about whether or not Esau was coming with a welcome party or a war party. The specific mention of 400 men seems to indicate that Esau was at least anticipating conflict, if not intending it. You know, Esau was coming prepared to fight. He wasn't coming bringing goods and female servants to help tend for cattle and children. He was coming with 400 men. So at this point, it could be argued real well that Esau still hasn't quite gotten over what happened. However, like we mentioned, Jacob wisely sent all these gifts ahead. In verse 22, Jacob wrestled with God. I forgot to mention as well, Jacob did pray in verses 9 through 12. He prayed that God would diffuse the conflict here. In verses 22 through the end of the chapter, a man in verse 24 wrestled with Jacob until the breaking of the day. When he touched Jacob's hip, some translations might say thigh or leg, but it was put out of joint. The man asked Jacob, "Let me go," and Jacob said, "Not until you bless me." So the man asked Jacob his name, and in verse 28, he said, "Your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel." Now, one thing that tells us a little bit about why this is significant, or tells us that this is significant, is this man or God. It's, you know, I'll leave that to you to decide what exactly this was or who exactly this was. But he used a play on words that we might not notice. The word for God wrestled is like Yahbek. The word for Jacob is, or Jacob wrestled, is Yaakob. And then the word for the Jabbok River was like Yabak. So this guy is actually making a play on words. He's saying, like, your name will no longer be Yabak or Jacob, but Israel, as he, Yaabek, is saying this at the Jabbok River. He's making a play on words to point out that this naming is important. Israel means struggle, right? More accurately, it means struggle with God. Or you could flip it around if you wanted to, God's struggle. And we'll come back and do this really briefly before we start our next class. But this event marks what I would call, in, you know, scripturally, Israel's struggle with God, both in the literal sense and also in the sense that the nation continued to struggle with God. Even while in slavery in Egypt, as soon as they were delivered from Egypt, which the next book, of course, is Exodus, this event marks Israel's struggle with God, and they never stopped. They never stopped struggling with God. And that's what happens right here when this angel renames, or I shouldn't say angel, because there's, again, I don't know exactly, but when this figure representative of God at least renamed Jacob.